Please be seated. Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. We have one case on the calendar this afternoon. Dynamic 3D Solutions versus Schlumberger, 2015-16-28. Mr. Hanley's going to argue first. And you are for Acacia?
Yes, I represent Acacia, Your Honor.
Yeah, I think you weren't on the briefs.
You're correct, I was not.
Yeah, you were from what firm?
I'm from Stradlin Yaka, the same firm that was on the briefs for Acacia, but I was not on the briefs at the time.
Please proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor. Good afternoon, and may it please the Court. For the record, Acacia's position would be not to proceed with the appeal based on the confidential settlement, but I'm prepared to address the merits, and I'll do that now. What if during the Apple-Samsung wars, a young in-house attorney at Samsung had gone to Apple and started working for Apple?
Let's not do hypotheticals. The district court found that Ms. Rutherford was presented with a PowerPoint presentation by outside counsel discussing Schlumberger, after which Rutherford approved Collins Edmonds' recommendations to acquire the 319 patent and sue Schlumberger. In contending this finding, on page 53 of appellant's brief, appellant states there are no facts showing that Charlotte Rutherford communicated confidential information that she received from Schlumberger. Isn't it possible for Rutherford to have based the decision to sue on confidential information she acquired without further communicating that confidential information?
If I understand Your Honor's question...
Well, if you don't, I'll restate it.
Well, as I do understand it, the Fifth Circuit standards require once the non-moving party, the party opposing disqualification, comes forward with a declaration saying that no actual confidential information was shared, the burden shifts to the moving party to show the specific confidential information that was shared. And that's what we think was insufficient. So this notion that concurring in the decision to file an action was implicit, or an inference can be drawn that confidential information was shared, is not viable.
What I'm saying is, I'm not saying it's implicit. I'm saying that her vote could represent confidential information.
Well, I would say three things. Number one, there's no case in the Fifth Circuit that applies that inference as where a wink and a nod, as it's called in some of the briefing, in some of the cases, constitutes a communication of affirmative evidence of a communication of confidential information. Number two,
I'm not talking about a wink and a nod. I'm not talking about body language. I'm talking about a legal action which she took, a vote, and by doing that, can't it be inferred that she's providing she's basing it on confidential information that she had?
Well, that's where we get to this inference, and we don't believe that this inference is proper under the Fifth Circuit standards for the reasons. Number one, there's no Fifth Circuit case that holds that. Number two, there's no case in any jurisdiction cited by any of the parties or that we're aware of that holds that this inference would apply in the context of attorney disqualification, which is an extreme remedy and requires this actual providing affirmative evidence. And the reason the affirmative evidence is required, and this was the National Oil Well Court, the district court, in applying Fifth Circuit standards, said, unless you tell us what actual confidential information is implicit in what you say was disclosed, we can't balance the harms. And that's the legal error that the district court committed here, is that it failed to do any balancing of the harms. And so without knowing what specific confidential information was allegedly inferentially or implicitly disclosed in that approval, the district court simply could not balance the harms from what that information purportedly was.
Let's see, how long did she work at Schlumberger? Was it 15 years? Or?
It was quite a long time. But the issue is, again, once there's the submission of declarations, as in National Oil Well, as in Pro-Education,
well, let's look at it a slightly different way. Because she worked there, a Chinese wall was required to be constructed.
That's not Fifth Circuit law. It's a balancing approach. The the Chinese law, Chinese wall can be, the ethical wall can be considered in assessing whether there should be disqualification, but it's
Are you conceding there was none?
There was none per se, but there were steps taken to keep her from communicating information about Schlumberger during the few meetings
but
until the
she certainly had information about the patent and about the decision to purchase it and the decision to sue. That's pretty clear.
And so what I'm focusing on is not whether there was a substantial relationship or whether there's a presumption that she had confidential information, but whether there is a presumption and whether that presumption has been rebutted that she shared confidential information with Acacia.
So you accept that there's a presumption, but you would say that it's rebuttable?
Not necessarily. The Fifth Circuit is unclear on whether there is a presumption or not with respect to the second step, namely the imputed disqualification step. But regardless of whether there is that second presumption or not, it's clear that balancing is required, and this district court performed no balancing. And it's also clear that there needs to be affirmative evidence of specific confidential information that was communicated and what the harm was to the Schlumberger in this instance with respect to the sharing of that information.
Which of you counsel is responsible for the motion to dismiss?
Both of us are responsible.
I mean in the sense of discussing it.
We don't need to discuss it unless Your Honor would have
questions. Well, I do want to discuss it in this sense.
All right. I'm into my rebuttal time, but I'm happy to answer your questions.
Yeah, and you will.
Yes.
So you provided that with a statement that there was a confidential settlement agreement, and you discussed what were allegedly the terms of that confidential settlement agreement, but you declined to attach that settlement agreement, apparently in the belief that we couldn't see it.
Well, we would have had to file a motion to file it under seal to be able to submit the entire settlement agreement. What we did is in a reply, we disclosed only so much of the settlement terms as were necessary to rebut the positions that were argued in the opposition. So there was a truncated quote of the settlement agreement in the opposition. So in a reply, we provided the full quote.
Very, very truncated.
I agree.
So in your view, is this case settled?
From Acacia's perspective,
it's troubling to me that you can't answer that with a quick yes or no, but yet you asked us to dismiss the case based on the fact that it's settled. Is it settled or isn't it settled?
There is a framework by which it can be settled for a nominal payment upon the conclusion
like
of this appeal.
That doesn't sound like it's settled.
Then why
did you waste our time with all these papers in the last couple days when we've already rescheduled this case for you once, and we had to prepare again, and you were going to ask us to dismiss it when it hadn't been settled?
For purposes of a financial consideration of whether this appeal should go forward, from Acacia's perspective, it is settled. You're correct, Your Honor, that the case is not terminated by virtue of a settlement. However,
is there a signed settlement agreement
yes.
by all parties?
Yes.
Then why are you saying it's not settled?
It requires a future action to terminate the patent case under the terms of that agreement. And that we did put that quote in the reply. And what it involves is once the appeal is concluded, which Acacia has the right but not the obligation to do, then Schlumberger can terminate the case.
Why is that in there then if you're the ones that wanted the appeal dismissed?
At the time of the settlement, there hadn't been an assessment of the full pros and cons of proceeding with the appeal. And so it's unfortunate, but that's
You've
once
told us
that
the settlement
came in,
was on June 16th.
June 17th, yes, Your Honor.
June 17th. Why did you wait 6 weeks before telling us that you want it dismissed?
I think as the time for the oral argument became closer, it became more clear that the business reasons for pursuing the appeal were just no longer present. It was a business decision. We apologize for any inconvenience at that cost.
Somebody better be prepared to discuss your business model, which your opposing counsel has presented to us as essentially a model of using litigation as a weapon in and of itself and then backing away at the last minute.
I would submit that there was one case submitted of terminating a litigation after a motion had been filed. We addressed that in our reply. So this notion that that's Acacia's habit is simply not supported by the record before this court, that Acacia backs off when it's facing inconvenient strategic type of decision. So that's an allegation that was thrown out there. It wasn't supported.
Frankly, that sounds to me a lot more like slap than somebody suing a former attorney employee and being told that preventing her from discussing confidential matters is slap.
Well, we have the underlying ruling in the state court case where there was an anti-slap motion was granted, but I'm not prepared today to comment further on that. I'm happy to.
Thank you, Mr. Henley. We'll hear from Mr. Collins, and we'll give you 3 minutes of rebuttal time.
Thank you very much, John.
May it please the court. I want to address the disqualification of my firm and the dismissal of the case, but happy to, of
course,
take
part of this settlement.
Your Honor, D3D, Dynamic 3D Geosolutions, the Acacia subsidiary, is a party to the settlement.
But is your firm a party to the settlement?
We are not.
So we have to address your arguments about disqualification, whether this is dismissed or not. You're not dismissing your appeal.
We don't have an appeal. Our only appeal, my firm is not appealing. The only appeal is of our client as to the disqualification of its outside counsel.
Okay.
So
you are wrapped up in this settlement. That disqualification.
We were not a part of the settlement.
I'm just trying to figure out if the settlement resolves this case or not.
In our view, the settlement does resolve the case. It gives Acacia the sole and unfettered right to continue the appeal or decide not to continue the appeal. But whether the appeal is continued or not, there are specific ends to the litigation.
Where does it say that in the settlement agreement?
And I'm going to quote without trying to reveal anything that's confidential. We'll be glad to file this under seal with the court. But it says that that all parties are going to bear their own costs and attorney's fees in all matters. That includes the appeals, the patent case, the state court case. That there are going to be mutual releases in the patent case regardless of the outcome. But that Acacia retains the right to appeal the disqualification order, the order before this court, provided that Schlumberger can settle the merits of the case if our appeal is successful for a nominal amount, and then it will still be dismissed. And I think in D3D's view, this is a settlement.
I think we'd like to see that if you could all agree to submit it under seal. Not now. I mean, you can submit it after the fact. It doesn't sound like it's a final settlement to me. It sounds like there's a lot of contingencies in there.
All I can say is that the litigation would not continue. Regardless of what happens with this appeal, the litigation is over between Dynamic 3D and Schlumberger and between Ms. Rutherford and Schlumberger in the state court case.
Go ahead and proceed.
Your Honor, it's D3D's position that the district court, in disqualifying outside counsel, my firm, committed two legal errors. The first was that it ignored binding Fifth Circuit precedent, the Brennan's case, which has never been criticized, never been overruled. And it misapplied the burden-shifting approach that it did end up adopting, albeit erroneously. Now, the Brennan case requires the movement for disqualification to show that confidential information of the former client was communicated, actually disclosed to co-counsel. In the Fifth Circuit, There's no imputation of disqualification to co-counsel. There's no presumption of disclosure of confidential information of the former client to co-counsel. Actual disclosure has to be shown. And it's our position that in this case, there was no evidence showing actual disclosure. There's no evidence in the record that Ms. Rutherford ever disclosed Schlumberger's confidential information to us. Now, the court asked about the wink and the nod theory. This idea that Ms. Rutherford's agreement to...
I didn't ask about a wink. Are you referring to my questions? Because I didn't ask about a wink and a nod theory. I asked about her actual conduct.
Okay. But I think then it's not a wink and a nod theory. It's this theory that her...
communication by conduct.
Communication by conduct being an implied communication as opposed to an actual communication, but there...
No, you're misunderstanding me. An actual communication by conduct. It's not a wink and a nod. It's not saying, oh, well, maybe, or something along those lines. It's a communication by conduct. Such events occur and are recognized by the law.
But there's no evidence in the record. First of all, there's no case law support for this idea that communication by conduct can be an actual communication of the confidential information of Schlumberger. And there's no evidence that any information was communicated to my firm by Ms. Rutherford. Obviously, there are a number of declarations in the record that the alleged presentation and PowerPoint never took place. But assuming that it did, for purposes of argument, there's no evidence that any concurrence or any agreement on the part of Ms. Rutherford was communicated to my firm. And even if the American Home Products burden-shifting approach was the law in the Fifth Circuit, which it's not, the district court simply misapplied it. Even if it was proper to shift the burden to my firm or to D3D to come forward with some evidence, the uncontroverted evidence establishes that no confidential information of Schlumberger could have been communicated to my firm.
Thank you, Mr. Collins. Mr. Grant, you have a full 15 minutes.
What's the law in the Fifth Circuit?
The law in the Fifth Circuit as to Ms. Rutherford is that once we show a substantial relationship, she's irrebuttably presumed to have obtained confidential information, and she is disqualified on that basis. And that's because we're not required to demonstrate the confidential information she had access to should she do precisely what she did, which is deny she had it or say she didn't remember it. With regards to the second level, with regards to the in-house counsel, the law in the Fifth Circuit, in my opinion, Your Honor, and I agree with the court, it's not crystal clear, is that there's a distinction between whether the representation is personal or not. So if Ms. Rutherford had been a labor lawyer and not personally representing Schlumberger on matters regarding the Petrel software and the value of Petrel and arguably the willfulness responsibility, then her disqualification would have been an imputed one, and when she left, she would have been in a position to rebut that, to say, I am no longer subject to the imputed confidential information I had because I didn't personally represent Schlumberger on those matters. I think pro-education shows, I agree that the whole the statement in American Airlines is a footnote in Ditka, but I think if the court looks at the pro-education, it'll see that pro-education is carefully delineating the difference between a personal representation and makes very close care to say, in the absence of a personal representation or acquisition of confidential information, and bases its holding on that. The Texas rules note this importance of personal representation. The ABA model rules don't talk about personal representation. The law in the Fifth Circuit, in my view, Your Honor, is because she was personally involved, the imputation to the other lawyers at her, quote, firm, and there's been no dispute that the in-house law firm constitutes a firm, is also irrebuttable. But Judge Yackel didn't go that far. Judge Yackel found that presumption to be rebuttable and then focused on the facts of the case. The issue here, Your Honor, is Ms. Rutherford left her client, and then almost immediately, she began working against her former client over her own work. The conduct here and the testimony that she provided was not wink and a nod testimony. It was not testimony about clicking a computer button. She testified repeatedly that she verbally communicated her recommendation to acquire the 319 patent and to sue Schlumberger to her lawyer colleagues at Acacia and to the outside litigation counsel. She participated in numerous meetings by her own deposition sworn testimony in her capacity as an Acacia lawyer. That was very clear. And in those meetings that she did not excuse herself from, the record shows that she participated in many meetings. It was a phone call that she did excuse herself from, but there were many meetings that she didn't, where the patent, where Schlumberger and Schlumberger's financials related to the Petrel product were discussed. And after Acacia's CEO green-lighted the lawsuit, it's in the record, Your Honor, she was sent an email with the benefit of Ms. Rutherford's endorsement. She was directed by her CEO to convince contingency counsel to take the case, knowing full well that much of the revenue that was implicated by the sequence of lawsuits was Schlumberger revenue. The accused Petrel product is a product that Ms. Rutherford worked on personally, directly, and the allegations of willful...
We've read them.
Yes, Your Honor, and the allegations of willful infringement implicate not just her personal representation, but her personal knowledge. She was the person at Schlumberger for a 2.5-year period that was responsible for obtaining opinions of counsel. Your Honor, I hate to quote my cousin Vinny, but those matters aren't substantially related. As the lawyer said, they're identical. So the disqualification of Ms. Rutherford, in our view, Your Honor, is compelled by the law and the ethical rules, and the disqualification of the attorneys that were infected with her disclosure of confidential information is also compelled. Now, there was a discussion about the legal standard for the Collins Edmonds firm. The Texas Supreme Court law on this is pretty clear. Once the party seeking disqualification, us, establishes that there was contact or communication between, in this case, Ms. Rutherford and Mr. Collins and his firm, then the burden shifts. And it shifts to the party resisting disqualification to show two things. They have to show no reasonable prospect that our confidential information was disclosed, and they have to show that it was, in fact, not disclosed. That's the law, and that's what was appropriately provided. The declarations that counsel pointed out to, I commit them to Your Honor for review.
We did review.
They're highly equivocal. What they say is, at no point did anyone at the Acacia entities ever informed me that Ms. Rutherford shared knowledge with them. To my knowledge, at no point has anyone asked to obtain this information. There are two declarations, the privilege log that were produced over great objection and after much motion practice in this case, show 16 Acacia attorneys who were involved in the conveyance of confidential information. It's a highly distinct case. Those declarations, by the way, were evaluated by Judge Yackel, and he made important credibility determinations that are the key to much of his rulings. And in those credibility determinations, he credited, unsurprisingly, Ms. Rutherford's testimony that was adverse to her interests, and not the self-serving declarations, and not the self-serving testimony that Ms. Rutherford gave. And that's consistent with the way many fact finders do. And only if you say something that's bad for yourself is it taken at face value.
Do you want to respond to the comments of your opponents who say the case was settled?
Yes, Your Honor. First of all, we're happy to provide a copy. Second of all, what Mr. Collins read, and I listened to him very carefully, is he said, Acacia retains the right to appeal, and Schlumberger has a right to settle the merits case if the appeal is fully concluded. That's not what it says, Your Honor. It says after the appeal is fully concluded. I don't think this case is settled, and I don't think the dismissal should be given the time of day.
Let me ask you about that, because it doesn't sound like there's an actual settlement of everything, but they're the appellant. They can dismiss their appeal if they want to, can't they?
You're
the prevailing party. You don't have a right to seek review. So what harm would there be to you if this case were dismissed?
Yeah.
So, apart from maybe costs.
Fair point, Your Honor, and costs, I agree, are resolved in terms of how they're... look, a denial of a voluntary dismissal is only appropriate based on our review of the case law if the parties are institutional litigants engaging in strategic behavior or if it concerns a matter of public importance. I would submit, Your Honor, that both of those apply here. Now, had Acacia moved to dismiss the appeal on June 18th or 20th or 25th, I think we'd be in an entirely different place. But the fact that they attempted to do this at the very last minute provided us with a, quote, stipulation.
You mean on June 18th they would have been within Rule 42B?
I think the argument that the institutional litigant and strategic behavior arguments would have been tougher then. And the fact that it comes at the last minute gives the court a prime opportunity to review those issues. I don't think it changes the facts, though, Your Honor, about the strategic behavior that's been occurring here. This practice of hiring in-house counsel, setting up a, quote, new line of work, and the energy, quote...
I'm just not sure what it gets you other than another court decision just saying that the disqualification was correct. I mean, you've already got that district court decision. It doesn't appear that that's going to be vacated as part of the settlement. So what difference does it make whether you have that decision or... you know, three of us saying that the district court was right?
Well, I think what it does, Your Honor, is it creates a precedent that goes beyond the Western District of Texas and would go to the Fifth Circuit, would encompass the Eastern District of Texas. And there was another case that Acacia filed against Schlumberger shortly after this one in the Eastern District of Texas. And when similar disqualification issues arose, that case was resolved. Now, there wasn't a motion filed, as I recall, in that case, as it was in the Sony case. But this is behavior that I think public... there's a public value, and I think this court should not only affirm, but it should offer guidance to district courts.
Let me ask you a question.
Yes, sir.
I asked your opposing counsel, because my recollection was that your allegations indicated a pattern of this conduct, not just the Sony matter, but other matters. Am I correct? Is my recollection correct?
Yes, Your Honor. And so those three cases are the ones we had in mind, two of which were actual cases that brought to a head. Our case was the first one. It's no surprise, Your Honor, that after our disqualification motion came up, the Sony motion was filed shortly thereafter. As you know, Acacia is an institutional litigant, and I think this caught the attention of many lawyers defending companies adverse to Acacia. So I do think this is important, and I do think it's important to provide district courts guidance in their duty to protect the integrity of the legal profession, because as the Fifth Circuit law says, this isn't about merely confidential information and confidentiality. This is about an attorney's duty of loyalty, and that was what was really violated here.
I would say I think it's also about an attorney's duty not to suborn disloyalty.
I'll have no dispute with that. I think that's a fair point as well, Your Honor. And I think, you know, this energy business that Ms. Rutherford was in charge of creating had three people in it. And the idea that she was somehow walled off or screened is not, I think, just a falsity in terms of the legal construct that was created, but also in the reality of it. She was part and parcel of every piece of conduct that was going on. And part of what was notable to me, Your Honor, you have to recall, I was the one who deposed her. That deposition occurred just a couple months after those complaints were filed. So when she testified that she hadn't reviewed the complaint till it was after it was filed, and we found out differently, when she testified she hadn't reviewed the financials and we found out differently, not only had she reviewed them and approved them, she retained a copy so that she could confer with Acacia's CEO about it. That was only a couple months after those events occurred. They would have been fresh in her mind.
Is it reasonable to assume that a published decision in this case may impact an appeal in the what is now a non-final case in the district court in Texas, the SLAP?
Well, so I think it may, Your Honor. Just so that the court has the record clear, the anti-SLAP finding was upheld by the court with an understanding that we had to prove, based on merely the pleadings in our complaint, that we had satisfied a clear and convincing level of evidence. It was legally erroneous. he imposed those sanctions, which he said he felt compelled to compose and had no discretion not to. That went up to the Court of Appeals, and that decision was vacated. That case went down. It was subsequently settled. But contrary to the misimpression created in the pleading yesterday, the money didn't go from us to them. It went very much in the other direction. So I think the litigants know where the merits of that case should have laid.
That's very serious. What you're telling me is very serious because it represents an allegation that your opposing counsel has made a direct misrepresentation to this court.
Your Honor, to the extent the court read that pleading to imply
that
we
they
paid
won a
them.
$600,000 judgment.
Yeah, that's why I look forward to providing a copy of the settlement agreement to the court, because I think the court will see the truth in the plain words of that settlement agreement. And I think the court's questions regarding whether the settlement is final or whether it's only final after the appeal will be clarified. And I think the court will see crystal clearly which way the money went. And I think while that is confidential, I think there was a deliberate misimpression created for public consumption. If I close, Your Honor, Ms. Rutherford's verbal concurrence and endorsement of the decision to acquire the patent and to sue Schlumberger violated her continuing duty of loyalty and conveyed the most important confidential information possible to Acacia's internal and external lawyers. Instead of divulging minor details that would have facilitated Acacia's due diligence and pre-suit investigation, she answered the two most important questions that anybody would want answered. When she concurred and provided her verbal endorsement, she said, buy the Austin Geo patent and sue Schlumberger. There are no more important confidential information that Ms. Rutherford could convey based on her many years of service covering that precise product, and there is no more violent breach of the continuing duty of loyalty she had to her former client Schlumberger that she could have committed. I would say that I would respectfully ask that the court affirm and provide guidance to the district courts, which I believe is important to protecting the integrity of our profession. The court has no further questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Grant. Mr. Hanley, we'll give you 3 minutes of rebuttal.
Thank you very much.
You need to discuss.
Yeah, addressing first your concern. There was an award against Schlumberger in the state court case.
Yeah.
And that is the extent of what we represented in our reply, and that the settlement wiped that or resolved that award, among other things, including the patent case upon conclusion of this appeal and payment of a substantial sum. So to the extent that Your Honor understood us to be saying that there was a lot of money being paid to Acacia in the settlement, we certainly didn't intend to imply that, and I don't think we did. So I just want to be clear. And I think the when we provide the settlement agreement, it'll clear up what we're saying.
That's not what interests me. What interests me is the opposing counsel's statement that it was vacated.
It would be wiped off the books by the settlement.
That's not what I heard him say.
Well, I
was it vacated by a higher court?
To the extent it's off the books, it's off the books by virtue of the settlement.
It's not what I asked you. Was it vacated by a higher court?
I don't believe it was.
We understand the distinction.
Okay. So moving on, at the beginning of counsel's comments, there was a comment that the distinction in Fifth Circuit law depends on whether the representation of the lawyer who goes from one firm to another is a personal representation. And I would say that that's inconsistent with at least the National Oil Well case, which is the most recent district court case other than ours that also applied the pro-education standard. In that case, there was personal representation, the attorney moved, and there was no imputed disqualification. So I would say that's not the case. Going back to Judge Hughes asked counsel if there was any harm to Schlumberger if the appeal were dismissed, and no answer was provided of harm to Schlumberger. There was comments about other factors outside of Schlumberger, but there was nothing identified as far as harm to Schlumberger. Going back to Judge Wallach's question about communication by conduct, which I understand more fully now based on the colloquy, the Fifth Circuit, even if that's the case, the Fifth Circuit's approach requires the court then to look at, even if you've got a communication by conduct, now you need to look at that, at what confidential information was allegedly shared, okay, and identify, and the burden is on the moving party to identify the specific harm that would be associated with whatever confidential information was deemed shared, and to balance that harm against the harm to the non-moving party that would result from disqualification, which is an extreme remedy. And the district court just didn't do that here, and that was clear error.
Thank you, Mr. Henley. We'll take the case under advisement.